Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 289 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as usual. Today, my guest is Karen Conroy. And Karen owns a digital marketing agency out in Southern California that caters extensively, or if not exclusively, to solo and small firm law firms. And, you know, wanted to have Karen on the show today because she brings kind of a refreshing, kind of unique approach to the aspect of digital marketing and how that plays such an important role for us solo and small firm practitioners, and how her firm thinks of things a little bit differently than your run-of-the-mill digital marketing agency. So without any further delay, here's my friend Karen Conroy. Karen Conroy, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to talk to you about this today.
I'm thrilled to have you join us today, Karen. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, it's a long story, but I own a digital marketing agency for lawyers called Conroy Creative Counsel, and I work exclusively with lawyers and law firms. And when I first started back in, 07, 08, a lot of people were not doing this. And a lot of my MBA friends looked at me kind of sideways, wondering, why would you only work with lawyers? And so, but now it's kind of come full circle where they realize that, first of all, there's lots and lots of lawyers and law firms out there.
Yeah.
And it's been a really good, very narrow, somewhat narrowly defined. I mean, there's so many different kinds of lawyers, but a good niche that has really built my business. And I've seen all this change over all these years that I've been doing this. So we work with lawyers and law firms across the country. We've got international clients, and we really work to build their law firms.
Well, is there a particular size of law firm that you serve best, or you feel like you serve best?
We're mostly been working a lot with solo and mid-sized firms. Okay. Anywhere from, I'd say, at least one or two attorneys up to 30 or 35 or so. The larger firms are usually going to have someone in-house and, bring in a full-time person. So they don't often, well, sometimes they outsource their work, but we'll be usually working with those size firms.
Great. And in terms, first of all, where are you physically located, and does that make any difference these days?
It doesn't make any difference. You and I are just sitting here on Zoom and having a great conversation. I feel like we might as well just be sitting over a cup of coffee, but I'm in Orange County, California.
Okay. And then tell us a little bit about the services that your company offers to, attorneys in the solo, small firm, and, somewhat low end, medium sized firms.
So we started years and years ago, and it was websites. And that was basically the main offer. And what everyone thought that they needed was just like, let's slap up a presence on the internet and we're done. Like, brush the hands off. That's it. There's our marketing plan. And yes, we definitely focus our projects getting that online presence out there. But over the years, we've come to realize, and our clients have come to realize, it's just not the end all. So now we really do hone in on strategy and positioning and messaging. And so we're a full service marketing agency where we start with the content and the strategy and the positioning of that firm, wherever they are in the lifespan of that firm, whether it's a brand new attorney going out on their own Or oftentimes we're working with firms who have never gone through this exercise of nailing their positioning and their messaging, and they've been floundering for years trying to figure that out. And, or maybe it's, they don't even realize that that's the piece. Just come to us and it's like, we've tried this, we've tried that, and nothing's working and we can't really figure it out. So we look at the whole bigger ecosphere of marketing and figure out what's missing, where we can come in, what elements need to be added, and we make a more strategic marketing plan for those firms. So it could be a photo shoot. It could be an ongoing photo and video strategy. It could be an ongoing content. It could be ongoing national PR if they are looking to, you know, get to that level of thought leadership. Or it could be if it's a, you know, a local firm that's really focused on, say, DWI or something like that, then it's more of an approach that's local. And so let's look at your Google local approach. Let's look at that whole avenue of marketing. So the short answer is that it really depends, like everything in the world. But we have all of the avenues that could need to be plugged in to any given marketing strategy.
You know, I remember in the early 2000s when the explosion of attorney law firms started to to take place. I remember an office mate of mine who did a one page kind of almost like an AOL type of quote website, and proudly announced, got his website done, took him an hour and a half to get it done. And, you know, just going to wait for all these clients to start rolling in the door. So,
well, you know, the funny thing is that those early days of the internet really misled some of us as small business people, where there were tactics that are in these days a little ridiculous like that. Yeah. But there were tactics where people were going out and buying these domain names and they would hone in on that, and they would buy like 100 different domains.
200 of them. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And that was their entire marketing strategy. But more often than not, it would be kind of what you described. Like, let's slap something up on the internet. And it wasn't even great. It was basically a brochure. Like, here is my name and contact information. Here is a list of the practice areas that I probably copied and pasted off of my competitor's site that I just was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty comprehensive. Let's just throw that in there. And then here's my phone number and email. And then I'll just sit here by the phone and wait for that to happen. And if you were an early adopter in that, there was some really misleading success in that, but that is not a marketing strategy anymore. A website is not an entire marketing strategy. And to approach it that way these days is not going to work.
I think that the only thing more difficult than a solo or small firm practitioner in the law trying to identify what their unique selling proposition is would be to be a digital marketing agency trying to identify what their unique selling proposition is. Because, you know, I think for most attorneys, they look at digital marketing firms and they think, well, they all do the same thing. And so how do you distinguish yourself? I mean, how are you able to provide something unique or tailored to the legal industry?
Well, it's a good question, because I do hear it a lot. And I also hear a lot of fear around handing over the content of a website or a strategy or the messaging when it's coming from, especially from a firm where I'm talking to the principal attorney or attorneys, where this is their baby and they have, you know, put their heart and soul into this. And how could anyone understand this any better than they do? And it's not necessarily an understanding of the firm, because we 100% rely on those clients to explain and express who their clients are, how they approach those matters differently, because every firm should be different. But at the end of the day, if you are hiring me and you and I have gone through enough conversations where you believe that I am the right marketing agency for your firm, and we are going to, you know, do the following marketing strategy, whatever that may involve, it's the same process that those lawyers are going through with their clients. And those clients oftentimes have not necessarily hired an attorney before, and they have a lot of fear around that as well. How could you possibly understand what's at stake for me in whatever this matter is that I'm hiring you for? And how are you going to get me a success and a successful result in this case without me spending so much money and wasting my money? And so the idea is not, okay, let's think about how I could DIY my marketing. In the same way that those attorneys don't want their clients to DIY their case, you are coming to us as the expert, and you are assuming, not assuming, you are understanding that I have an MBA in marketing, and I have worked with hundreds of law firms. I know the difference instantly when I land on a good law firm website and a good legal marketing strategy versus one that has just been slapped up on the wall, and I can look instantly at a website and say, okay, they have tried everything under the sun. They are throwing it all against the wall and hoping something sticks. And I can look and know, just because of my years of experience, what's happening with that firm and what's probably happening internally with their budgets and their levels of anxiety and their levels of success, in the same way that an attorney can look at that potential client and say, I see where that problem is. I see where I can come in and solve that problem. And, you know, I, as an expert, am approaching it in the same way as an attorney as an expert. So it's just a matter of vetting those experts and determining whether you trust those experts to know what they're doing.
Well, I think the other self-defeating viewpoint that attorneys frequently hold when doing just that, when they're vetting a digital marketing agency that they may be considering, is they all too frequently say, but I want it to sound like me. I want it to be in my voice. How can you as an agency reflect my personality in all the marketing material? And how can you make it to where it doesn't come out sounding salesy and looking like everybody else's marketing material?
Well, there's two pieces to that. There's the not looking like everyone else's. Well, actually, I would say three: not looking like everyone else's, sounding salesy, and then your voice. And my clients pretty quickly come to recognize that I have a very clear and clean personality. I do not mince words. I say things very black and white. This is just my personality and kind of how I approach life in general. But I am going to tell you up front that your website and your marketing of your firm is a marketing exercise. It is not an ego exercise. And when you get your ego in the way, it interferes with your success.
Well, so cut to the chase there, Karen. I mean, don't mince words, but you're spot on, because that is an ego viewpoint coming through. Continue.
It is. Now, here, the thing to know is that it is not unimportant that you've had success. And it is not, I am in no way saying that you shouldn't have your bio and you shouldn't have the certain amount of your success and results and, you know, victories, but it depends on what your client wants to hear. So if you are a PI attorney, your client wants to hear something completely different about your successes and your victories and the level of success and potentially some of those monetary values of your success than what an estate planning attorney would want to hear, and an estate planning client would want to hear.
Yeah.
So if I was potentially a client coming into your office and you had slapped across all of these different successes that you'd had in settling different kinds of estates, and they had monetary values kind of in the way that you sometimes see a PI site, it would be so off-putting and I would just instantly cringe and then go to the next guy.
Yeah.
So it's important to position it and present that information in the right way. I want to hear that you have had those kind of successes and you've worked with families. But in my definition of success as an estate planning client, it's that my legacy is understood, my family is taken care of, that my wishes are honored, all of those kinds of things that have nothing to do with money or a dollar sign. Whereas a PI client has a totally different need and interest when they're coming to your site.
Or that you understand how crazy my family is.
Right. And you make it peaceful. And you kind of, you know, when it comes to reading my will and I'm not here to make this a peaceful experience, that is the goal here for whatever the goal is for that client is conveyed on that website, not the goal of the attorney. The attorney is, you know, when you imagine those meetings where they're reading the will or whatever that might be, if the attorney is front and center and they're leading with their resume and you know, this is where I went to law school, that's so bizarre, but that is the way that a lot of these websites are approaching this initial first impression interaction that clients are reading on your website. So it's important to convey that you have that expertise, that you've done these kinds of cases, that you've worked with different families and you've had those kinds of resolutions in the past. And on an estate planning firm's site, for example, you can do that with testimonials and things that convey all that emotion, but it shouldn't necessarily be front and center. That should be a secondary experience in that user experience. The first thing is, do you understand my problem? And am I in the right place?
Well, let me reinforce that, because I was going to ask you, what is the single primary purpose of a website?
Yeah, it's to let them know that they are in the right place and you can solve their problem, period. And then you are going to support those ideas with all kinds of secondary details and information and supporting information. And that information will be different depending on who your clients are and what kind of practice you, what kind of information you have to support each of those ideas. But that's secondary. It's like the whole dating process. You're not going to skip ahead and introduce yourself and say, hi, I'm Rich, let's get married on the first date. Yeah. You are going to go through that process of getting to know each other. And if you skip to that, you know, those other steps, it's not like you're expediting the process. You're turning them off and they don't want to even hear anything else you have to say.
I hear so many attorneys say that the purpose of my website is to give the prospective client all the information they could possibly need to determine whether or not I can do the job for them. And I think, no, you're really overwhelming the client there. Yes. And you're not showing that you understand what their issue is at all. You're saying, look how great we are. Wouldn't you really want to work with us because we're so great?
And all of the information out there is the easy answer.
Yeah.
So when I look at a lot of these websites where they are just on their homepage, it scrolls for like a mile and a half. And first they have a whole list of results, and then they have their practice area, and then they have some testimonials, and then they have a blog, and then they have, you know, 400 different things. It's because they haven't figured out what works. And they are also coming across as so desperate, and they haven't put the time into fine tuning it and simplifying it. And when you look at, and I hate that people overly quote the Apple design approach, but it's quoted because it's the most commonly understood. When you look at their approach, the idea is that less is more. And it's done when you keep adding things, but when you've taken away all of that extra stuff that's getting in the way. So that's much more complicated to do, especially for attorneys who want to make sure that, you know, their disclaimers and their contract is as long as it possibly can, and it includes every possible thing that you could never possibly think of 5 years down the road. It's really a hard exercise for a lot of attorneys to fine-tune and minimize their content in a way that really clearly conveys what they're trying to convey.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works, and we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. One of the things that I like about the law is that if you can work in one practice area, and then as your needs change or your interests change or your desires change, you know, you can switch over and work in a different practice area. Certainly what I did. You know, I started off in personal injury, and then I added family law, as all the listeners of this show know, and ultimately have now migrated completely to estate planning. And one of the observations I had along the way was that the paradigm of what my website needed to do really shifted as I changed practice areas, because what was important for potential family law clients was not important for estate planning clients. And indeed, even the selling paradigm changed. Yeah. I mean, for family law, you want to be top of mind so that when that need arises, they think of you and find you and recognize that you can address the problem that they have.
Right.
Estate planning oftentimes is convincing them that they need to do estate planning. That is an important adulting activity, you know?
Yes.
So it's a different paradigm. Do you find that now working across a broad spectrum of practice areas for a variety of law firms around the country and beyond, that in itself presents a challenge? Or are you able to distill that down into some commonalities?
Well, we don't look at it as that there are commonalities between those firms. The main commonality is conveying how that firm has the expertise and understanding of the problem to get it done. And so that's what we're really trying to nail down. And from one firm to the next, it's really, really different, exactly how you described. Mm-hmm. And usually when I'm explaining how the work we do is different, I use those differences between PI and estate planning, because if there is a spectrum, those are the two ends of the spectrum for the most part. I mean, those kinds of clients have totally different levels of urgency, totally different kinds of needs, and a totally different kind of approach. So it really is two different kinds of businesses. And when you look at, there's this brilliant idea of the vitamin versus the painkiller in marketing. So when you look at the level of urgency on a PI case, they have some major triggering event that has caused them to need your services. And there is no question in their mind that they need your services, whether it's you or another firm, they need help.
They need somebody.
So it's just a matter of, they need somebody. And so then it's just a matter of figuring out who that right person is, and then, you know, pulling the trigger on that. But when you look at the estate planning firm, like you were describing a minute ago, they don't necessarily think that they need it today. And so the idea of this vitamin versus the painkiller is that everyone knows that they should probably take vitamins, but they just sit on the shelf. And there's, you know, it's always a good idea, but it's also kind of like the vegetables that sort of go bad in your CRISPR drawer. They just kind of sit back there. But when you have a major headache or some kind of pain, you will wake up at 2 a.m. and drive to Walgreens to make sure that you address that pain. And so when we talk to estate planning firms or firms where the decision is not quite as far down the road or not quite as matured and ready to be made, we have to push those people into a place where it's more of a painkiller. So we have to address that need in a way that we communicate in a positive kind of understanding and supportive way that this thing that we're talking about, it really is, there is a pain and there is something that could create all of these potential issues, but and I have the painkiller for that. It's not a vitamin. We know that vitamins are a good idea, but a vitamin has, I could do it today. It has no sense of urgency. I might or may not make the decision. And I'll probably look at it and think that's a great idea and then file it over in that file that I never quite get to. So it's about moving that decision into a point where it's more close to taking action without being smarmy or a used car salesman, like fear-mongering kind of way. It's that kind of smooth process.
Now, along the way, as you've been doing this for a number of years, obviously you've seen a lot of changes in the digital marketplace and, and, you know, it's changing ever rapidly every day, literally by the hour. The growth, talk to me a little bit about the growth of content marketing and in particular video marketing in terms of the legal space.
Well, it's almost not quite right to even call the things that we were doing back in, you know, the beginning websites, because they were technically, but that product and that end thing is so completely different in almost every way.
Vastly different.
in literally almost every way. The technical things that we were doing and using to even on the back end put together a website, none of them are the same. When I go back and find old emails, like if I have a client who pops back up after 10 years, I go and I have to find these archives of those files. And I'm like, well, none of this is even valid anymore. The technology is so outdated. It would be better to just, you know, bulldoze it all and start over. It's like a bad old house that doesn't have any cute redeeming qualities to it, but like just bad. You just bulldoze it. So in terms of content marketing, that wasn't a thing. That wasn't even a thing.
Not even on somebody's radar.
No, there wasn't. I remember when I used to follow a lot of bloggers and the idea of lawyers being bloggers was just like, you just sort of squinted and tilted your head sideways. Like what, how, why would a lawyer be a blogger? That just sounds like, once again, that sort of used car salesman approach that I don't see, you know, a very high quality, high end lawyer wanting to do that. But we have slowly come into this transition where a lot of firms weren't calling it a blog, or they weren't calling themselves bloggers. They were calling it a news section, or they were at least promoting their successes. But the functionality from a website side is all the same. So I even have clients to this day that's like, we don't want a blog. We definitely do not want a blog on our site, but we have the following 500 pieces of news. Well, that's the same thing from a technical side.
We have this content that we want to put out there and make evergreen.
Make evergreen, and it needs to come out on a regular basis and be promoted in kind of a post format, which from a technical side, that is a blog. Whatever you want to call this thing, whether it's a blog or your news section or, you know, your firm updates, whatever word you put on top of it, this is your content. And this is what Google cares a lot about. And this is how your firm will most likely earn your rankings and improved rankings over time from Google. So Google wants to see that your website is updated. Google wants to see that you're contributing to the conversation, that you're adding valuable information. And the more that you do that, your ranking goes higher. People find you more. The more traffic that shows up on your website, then Google notices that. And then your ranking goes up because of that. So it is this nice kind of endless circle of how that all works and how you play that game with Google.
Yeah, I wish that attorneys would take more of the approach that it's their mechanism for having conversation with the public that they don't know.
Right.
And if you think of it that way, and it becomes interactive, with comments and back and forth, hopefully they're all pleasant comments, that's what Google sees. They see that interaction and they see that attention that others are paying. And that, in and of itself, a blog post that falls in the forest and nobody's there to hear it is, just an entry on your website. But if you can, if you can make it part of the conversation, then you're accomplishing something.
Exactly. And Google does care. And there, for me, there's usually some impact, even of those lesser performing blog posts. Google wants to see that you're updating the site. Google wants to see what it is that you think people care about on your site. And so you're kind of honing that little area that you are trying to claim as your expertise. So even if it's not the highest performing blog post, it's worth putting a recurring amount of content over and just out there and having things present in order to be part of that conversation.
It certainly has value for sure. I don't want to minimize that. Now, increasingly, over the last couple, 3 years, video has now taken, center stage.
Yes.
And, I always feel like 5 years ago, if you didn't have a blog on your website, you were way behind. Now, if you don't have video on your website, you're way behind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think just as human beings, not even coming to it from the technical and the SEO side of it, but just in the way that attention works with our brains and our eyes. And, I wrote a blog post, I want to say it was maybe 8 or 10 years ago, about eye tracking surveys, and they have, these ways where they do these heat maps on websites. Mm-hmm. And typically your eye in these regions where we read from left to right, your eye is going to start in that top left corner, and then it creates a heat map that's sort of F-shaped. F is in Frank. So it'll move from the top left towards the right and then down the page, and it scans. And we are not people who want to read those paragraphs of text. It seems overwhelming and your brain just says, no, I don't want to approach that. That's too much. Give it to me, break it down for me so I can understand what you're trying to say. And in the same way, video cuts through all the way. I can see all of your emotional inflections. I can tell just in the way that we can tell when we first meet someone, all of these things that we understand instinctually, whether we trust them, whether we believe what they're saying, whether it sounds like they know what they're talking about. And a lot of these videos that you're initially seeing on websites, especially the kind of introductory videos that are usually a minute or less, are short and succinct, but they are just really kind of trying to nail one significant point. And it's so much more compelling. Your eye is drawn to motion, number one. And then your eye, you really want to feel like you're getting to know those people. And there's so much more going on when it's a video than just a still picture.
And I'll make the argument on behalf of digital marketing companies like your own, that just as in terms of blogging on your website, bloggers, really successful bloggers who have millions of views and are read on a daily or weekly basis, they're that way because they've got this process nailed down. They know how to write a headline. Right. They know how to use subheadings. They know how to grab the reader and entertain and inform. I venture to say most attorneys don't know that to the level.
It's a totally different language. Marketing.
It's different. It's different. So why would you think you can or you do? Why wouldn't you say there's somebody smarter than me that knows this?
Well, the best clients that I work with do say that.
Yeah.
And that's one of, you know, when I'm going through those initial intake calls and thinking about whether this is a good fit, if we're going to work together, that's one of the, we all talk about the red flags, but that's a green flag for me. Like right away when they say, listen, I am an attorney. I am an expert in this thing that I'm an expert in, but I am not an expert in marketing. And so I am hiring you to convey these things that I don't have that expertise in. And so that is not as common as the first example that we were talking about a little bit earlier, where they are leading with that fear and why should I hand over my baby to you? Right. So those are the two most common approaches.
Competing interests.
This is my baby. Right. This is my baby. And how could you possibly understand it better than I do versus that client who comes in and says, listen, I want to be a lawyer and I want to focus my day on being a successful lawyer and taking in all these cases. Your job is to bring them in and to gather this traffic and fine tune the traffic and understand how to point the ship in the direction of the right traffic. And then I will take the traffic from there and do what we need to do. And so if you're trying to do both of those pieces, both point the ship, get all the marketing pieces, you know, bring all the traffic into your firm, and be the functional main person in the firm that's actually executing those cases, nothing's going to be done at the level that it could be if you are really just focusing on getting that work done and doing the client work.
What you do best.
Right.
And the same is really true for video. And
right.
You can go down this video rabbit hole and it just can consume all of your time. I have no problems and encourage attorneys, shoot your own video, take that phone out, do your 5-minute walking video or in the car video or in your office video, but then turn it over to somebody who knows what to do with it.
Exactly.
Put a front end, a back end, put all the bells. Like my podcast, I don't edit my own podcast.
Right. Nor should you.
Nor should I.
So much.
I have these great professionals that make me sound way better than I have a right to sound. And the same is true with video. Turn it over to a professional to make you look and sound way better than you have a right to.
And video is just like any other piece of content, but when you are recording, let's even say it's a 1 or 2 minute video. And usually when I mention that it can be 1 or 2 minutes to my clients, it becomes more approachable. Like each video does not have to be 4 or 5 minutes. It can just be one very pointed question that you are answering. And then you just hand that question over to your team and they can take that one piece of video content and repurpose it. And they should be repurposing it in so many different ways, social media, YouTube, on your website, you know, in different
in your newsletter
that they can use. Yeah. Exactly. One little piece of video content like that can get you a lot of mileage. And it should be. So any little piece of work that you do like that, you know, you should be spreading that around and getting as much mileage as you can with it.
I forget who said, it might've been Andy Stickle, our good friend Andy, who showed where he took one small video and turned it into 9 informational products.
Yeah. And it should easily be. You could have a download. So let's say you have 10 frequently asked questions about DWIs in whatever your city is. And then you do 10 different videos for each one. You can create downloads for each of those. You can have social media content for each of those. You can repurpose social media content multiple times without people blinking an eye in any way. They're used to seeing, you know, if you repurpose question number 2 a couple times over a few months, everyone is used to seeing that. So that's fine. So now you've got, if you had 10 questions, now you've got at least 20 or 30 that you can use for different blog posts. Then you throw that on your website, on your blog, and, you know, and on your LinkedIn and all of those other pieces. And now think about the numbers of people, depending on how many followers you have between all of those different platforms, including your website, that one piece of content is now reaching.
Yeah. I'll give a little tip to folks. If you want to look for, because I hear them oftentimes say, I don't know what to create a video about. And one little thing that I've been doing lately is, you know, I have blog posts going back 5 years.
Right.
And for a while there, I was blogging every week. So go back 5 years, pick an interesting blog post, do a video on it.
I would even add that you can add a little bit more data behind that. So look at your Google Analytics and see what has been getting traffic. Yeah. And so that you're choosing something, you know, based on some, a little bit of strategy in there, like go look at and see what people care about.
Although sometimes you'll be surprised by that, because I just recently did that and I was stunned to find that the blog post that had the most traction on my website was, how can I will my car out, or how can I pass my car down outside of a will? I thought, well, that's a pretty narrow and odd thing to be ranked number one. I mean, it was, I enjoyed writing it. It was pretty informative, but man, I never thought that would be number one.
Right. Well, so you know, ride that wave.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
You can easily, you know, update that and repurpose that content. And that's a pretty narrow topic. So take that old blog post, update it, throw that in your social media. But you could also just build out from there and
say,
say you have, you know, 10 frequently asked questions on different things. And that could be one of them, of the answers.
What but else besides my car? What else besides my car can pass outside my will?
Right. You know? Yeah. So. Exactly. But frequently asked questions are a great place to really think about your content, because the purpose of frequently asked questions is to overcome objections. There are people who are potentially on that road to a decision and they've got some objections and you are answering those objections for them. So think about those things that people usually ask when you know that they're likely to hire you, but then they have a few questions, and then answer those so that right away, as they're coming into your office, you've already addressed those things that they some of them they might have not even heard of, but or thought about, but a previous client did. So I would totally recommend to focus in on those FAQs.
I recently had an attorney show me where they included on their client intake form, what are the three questions you most seek to answer?
Yeah.
And
it's great.
And so they're soliciting those questions right up front from potential clients. And it goes into their big FAQ jar that they then, you know, address.
That's really good.
Yeah. Put it on their intake.
Yeah. Cause I mean, if they don't know what the client's goals are and their main focus in being there, how can they say that they're really solving the problems?
Right. Well, too oftentimes we write the FAQ portion of our website based on the questions we want them to ask.
Right.
As opposed to the ones they really are asking, like, how do I pass my car down outside the will?
Exactly.
Listen, Karen, it's been so much fun chatting with you. I do appreciate you taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur. Absolutely. Tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up and anything you had to say today.
So my website is conroycreativecouncil.com, and I am on pretty much every social media platform, LinkedIn, all of those. But you can find all of those links on my website, conroycreativecouncil.com.
And we will have that in the show notes for all of our listeners who are either in the car or on the treadmill or otherwise unable to jot that down. So again, Karen, I do appreciate you taking the time to be here, and I wish you the best of luck. And next time I'm in Southern California, let's get together over that cup of coffee.
That sounds perfect. Thanks so much for having me.
Take care. Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, and Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionist. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review if you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it. It does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.